Alice Faye, May 5th, 1915 to May 9th, 1998, was an American actress and singer called by the New York Times one of the few movie stars to walk away from stardom at the peak of her career. She's remembered first for her stardom at 20th Century Fox and later as a radio comedy partner of her husband, band leader and comedian Phil Harris. She's also often associated with Academy Award-winning standard You'll Never Know, which she introduced in the 1943 musical film Hello, Frisco, Hello. Her early life. Born Alice Jean Leppert in New York City, she was the daughter of a New York police officer of German descent and his Irish-American wife, Charles and Alice Moffat Leppert. Faye's entertainment career began in vaudeville as a chorus girl. She failed an audition for the Ziegfeld Follies when it was revealed she was too young before she moved to Broadway and featured role in the 1931 edition of George's White Sandals. By this time, she adopted her stage name and first reached a radio audience on Rudy Vallee's The Fleischman Hour, 1932 to 1934, where she may have met her future husband and comedy partner, Phil Harris. Meanwhile, she gained her first major film break in 1934 when Lillian Harvey abandoned the lead role in a film version of George White's 1935 Scandals, in which Vallee was also to appear. Hired first to perform a musical number with Vallee, Faye ended up as the female lead. She became a hit with film audiences of the 1930s, particularly when Fox Production had Daryl Zanuck made her his protege. He softened Faye from a wisecracking showgirl to a youthful yet somewhat motherly figure, such as she played in a few Shirley Temple films. Faye also received a physical makeover, from being something of a singing version of Jean Harlow to sporting a softer look with a more natural tone to her blonde hair and more mature makeup, including losing the notorious pencil eyebrows. Considered less than serious as an actress and more than serious as a singer, Faye nailed in what many critics consider her best acting performance in 1937's In Old Chicago. The film was also extremely memorable for its 20-minute ending, a recreation of the Great Chicago Fire. A scene so dangerous that women, except for the main stars, were banned from the set. Her co-stars in that film were Tyrone Power and Donna Metchie, two of Faye's most frequent co-stars. As it was customary for studios to pair its contract players together in more than one film, Faye, Power, and Metchie were reunited for 1938's Alexander's Ragtime Band. Although the film was mainly designed to showcase over 20 Irving Berlin songs, Faye again received strong reviews, and the film was considered a landmark, from changing the status of musicals as light, frivolous fare to a respectable film genre. One of the most expensive films of its time, it also became one of the most successful musicals of the 1930s. By 1939, Faye was named one of the top 10 box office draws in Hollywood. That year, she made Rose of Washington Square with Tyrone Power. Although a big hit, the film was supposedly based on the real life of comedian Fanny Brice, and Brice sued Fox for stealing her story. Because of her bankable status, Fox occasionally played Faye in films that were put together more for the sake of making money than showcasing Faye's talents. Films like Tailspin and Barricade, both 1939, were more dramatic in nature than regular Faye films and often did not contain any songs for Faye to sing. But due to her immense popularity, none of the films that she made in the 1930s and 1940s lost money. In 1940, Faye played one of her most memorable roles, the title role in the musical biopic Lillian Russell. Faye always named this film as one of her personal favorites, but it was also her most challenging role. The tight corsets Faye wore for this picture caused Faye to collapse on the set several times, and it shrunk her waist 6 inches. After declining the lead role Down Argentine Way due to an illness, Faye was replaced by the studio's newest musical star, Betty Grable. She was paired as a sister act opposite Grable in the film Tin Pan Alley. Later that same year, During the making of the picture, a rumor arose that there was a rivalry between Fay and Grable. In a biography interview, Fay admitted that the Fox publicity department built up the rumor, but she was otherwise very close to Grable. Over time, Grable would become Fox's top musical star, but her value did nothing to diminish Faye's success. Grable would also take many movie roles that were initially designed with Faye in mind. In 1941, Fox began to place Faye in musicals photographed in Technicolor, a trademark for the studio in the 1940s. She frequently played a performer, often one moving up in society, allowing for situations that ranged from the poignant to the comic. Films such as Weekend in Havana and That Night in Rio, where she played a Brazilian aristocrat, made good use of Faye's husky singing voice, solid comic timing, and flair for carrying off the era's starry-eyed romantic storylines. In 1943, after taking a year off to have her first daughter, Faye starred in the Technicolor musical Hello, Frisco, Hello. Released at the height of World War II, the film became one of Faye's personal favorites and one of her highest-grossing pictures for Fox. It was in this film that Faye sang You'll Never Know. The song won the Academy Award for Best Song for 1943, and the sheet music for the song sold over 1 million copies. However, since there was a clause in her contract, as was the case with most other Fox stars, stating that she could not officially record any of her movie songs, other singers like Dick Haymes, whose version hit number one for 4 weeks, Frank Sinatra, and Rosemary Clooney, have been more associated with the song than Faye. However, it is still often considered Faye's signature song. That year, Faye was once again named one of the top box office draws in the world. End of motion picture career. As Faye's star continued to ascend during the war years, family life became more important to her, especially with the arrival of a second daughter, Phyllis. After her birth, Faye signed a new contract with Fox to make only one picture a year, with the option of a second one, and in order to give Faye a chance to spend more time with her family. But Faye also used this as an opportunity to campaign for serious roles, turning down numerous scripts on the process. Faye finally accepted the lead role in Fallen Angel, whose title became only too telling as circumstances turned out. Designed ostensibly as Faye's vehicle, the film all but became her celluloid epitaph when Zanuck, trying to build his new protege Linda Darnell, ordered many Faye scenes cut and Darnell emphasized. When Faye saw a screening of the final product, she drove away from Fox Studio, refusing to return, feeling she had been undercut deliberately by Zanuck. According to her obituary in the New York Times, Miss Faye handed the keys to her dressing room to the studio gate guard and drove off the lot. In 1987, she told an interviewer, "When I stopped making pictures, it didn't bother me because there were so many things I hadn't done. I had never learned to run a house. I didn't know how to cook. I didn't know how to shop. So all these things filled all those gaps." Zanuck hit back, it is said, by having Faye blackballed for breach of contract, effectively ending her film career. Released in 1945, Fallen Angel was Faye's last film as a major Hollywood star. Ironically, for several years after Zanuck tried to bring Faye back on the screen with major roles in films such as The Dolly Sisters, The Three Girls in Brooklyn, The Razor's Edge, and Wabash Avenue, which she would give her the chance to work opposite her husband, Phil Harris. 17 years after the Fallen Angel debacle, Faye went before the cameras again in 1962's State Fair. While Faye received good reviews, the film was not a great success and she made only infrequent cameo appearances in films thereafter, most notable playing the secretary in the critically panned all-star flop Juan Ton Ton, The Dog Who Saved Hollywood, in 1976. Marriage and radio career. Faye's first marriage to Tony Martin in 1937 ended in a divorce in 1940. A year later, however, she married Phil Harris. This marriage became a plot line on an episode of the hit radio show hosted by Harris's then-employer, Zach Binney, which struck platinum both in Faye's personal and in her professional life. The couple had two daughters, Alice, 1942, and Phyllis, 1944, along with Harris's adopted son from his first marriage, Phil Harris Jr. And they began working in radio together as Faye's film career declined. First, they teamed to host a variety show on NBC, The Fitz Bandwagon, in 1946. Originally conceived as a music showcase, the Harris's gently tart comedy sketches made them the show's breakout stars. By 1948, Fitz bowed away a sponsor in favor of Rexall, the pharmaceutical giant, and the show, now a strictly situation comedy with a music interlude, each from husband and wife, was renamed the Phil Harris-Alice Faye Show. Harris's comic talent was already familiar through his tenure on the Jack Benny Show, where he played Benny's wisecracking, jive-talking hipster band leader. With her own show revamped to a sitcom, band leader comedian Harris and singer-actress Faye played themselves, raising two precocious children in and out of slightly zany situations, mostly involving Harris's band guitarist Frank Grimley, Elliot Lewis, obnoxious delivery boy Julius Abrugio, Walter Tetley, familiar as nephew Leroy in The Great Gildersleeve, Robert North as Faye's fictitious deadbeat brother, Willie, and sponsor's representative, Mr. Scott, Gail Corden, and usually involved bumbling, malpropping Harris needing rescue from acidly loving Faye. The Harris's two daughters were played on radio by Jeanine Ruse and Ann Whitfield, written mostly by Ray Singer and Dick Chevallat. The show stayed on NBC radio as a fixture until 1954. Faye singing ballads and swing numbers in her honey contralto voice was a regular highlight of the show, as was a knack for tart one-liners equal to her husband's. The show's winning gags also included references to Alice's wealth from her film career. "I'm only trying to protect the wife of the money I love," was a typical Harris drollery, and occasional barbs by Faye aimed at the rift Rosannock usually referenced Fallen Angel in one way or another. Faye and Harris continued various projects individually and together for the rest of their lives. Faye made a return to Broadway after 43 years in a revival of Good News with her old Fox partner John Payne, who was replaced by Gene Nelson. In later years, Faye became a spokeswoman for Pfizer Pharmaceuticals, promoting the virtues of an active senior lifestyle. The Faye-Harris marriage endured until Harris's death in 1995. Before that, the couple donated a large volume of their entertainment memorabilia to Harris's hometown, Linton, Indiana. 3 years after her husband's death, Alice Faye died in Rancho Mirage, California, from stomach cancer, 4 days after her 83rd birthday. She was cremated, and her ashes rest beside those of Phil Harris at the mausoleum of the Forest Lawn Cemetery in Cathedral City near Palm Springs, California. She has a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in recognition of her contribution to motion pictures at 6922 Hollywood Boulevard, period. In 1994, a Golden Palm star on the Palm Springs, California Walk of Stars was dedicated to her. The Phil Harris Alice Faye Show remains a favorite of old-time radio collectors. Popularity and legacy. Her voice, the New York Times wrote in her obituary, was inviting. Irving Berlin was once quoted as saying that he would choose Faye over any other singer to introduce his songs, and George Gershwin and Cole Porter called her the best female singer in Hollywood in 1937. During her years as a musical superstar, Alice Faye managed to introduce 23 songs to the hit parade, more than any other female Hollywood movie star. During her peak years, she was often considered the female equivalent to Bing Crosby. Although Faye has always had many fans around the globe, she was never more popular anywhere else than she was in England. In the Alice Faye movie book, a particular article is devoted to Faye's popularity there. The author of the article, Arthur Nicholson, mentions that Faye was enormously popular there, even in her hollow days. As opposed to the other films shown in England, which were usually shown for 3 days a week, all of Faye's films were given the rare privilege of being played for an entire week. The article goes on to mention that even after Faye retired in 1945, her old films still made as much money, in some cases even more, as current releases. When Faye returned to the screen for State Fair in 1962, the film broke records in England. In 1966, the BBC aired Alexander's Ragtime Band on television, and soon other Faye films followed. As the writing of the article, the BBC stated that there were more requests for Faye's pictures than any other stars. For the Old Time Radio Researchers, I'm Mike Thomas, your announcer.